Hello, everyone. It's time for Parenting 101. I'm Elizabeth Menetray, and I'm with my guest, Dana Crane, mental health counselor from CLATSIP Behavioral Healthcare Child and Family Services team. Thank you for coming in, Dana.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to talk about mental health today because coming up May 1st to May 7th is Children's Mental Health Awareness Week. I want to start off with talking about depression, and I read doing a little research that depression affects 1 in 8 adolescents and 1 in 33 children. That's a lot. What do parents look for if they think their child is suffering from depression more than such a normal thing as regular grief if, say, a pet dies or something like that would be normal? What are they looking for?
Symptoms of depression vary. To start with, you'd look for some excessive sadness and maybe unexpected crying spells. Some other symptoms would include cranky and irritable. A lot of times people aren't aware that those are symptoms, especially in children of depression. Definitely mood swings. So swings between normal mood and then excessive sadness again, and then going up into elation. So it can be mood swings are another thing to watch out for. Isolating, so hiding out from family and friends, not wanting to come out to dinner, not wanting to do the usual things that used to bring joy to the child. Fatigue, low energy is another symptom to watch for. Sleep disruption, too much sleep or too little sleep, trouble falling asleep, waking during the night, things like that. Feelings of hopelessness, like they'll never have a future or that they're a bad person. And then also suicidal thoughts and actions. And then deteriorating hygiene. So there's lots of signs and symptoms, and It's important to be aware of them, especially when they're occurring together.
How about bipolar? We hear a lot about bipolar these days. What are we looking for with bipolar, which is a kind of depression?
Again, there you're looking at mood swings, and there's a couple different kinds of bipolar disorder. And bipolar 1 is where mood swings from a high elation down to normal and then down to depression, sadness. So it's a real wide range of swing. And then I believe bipolar 2 is just a swing between normal and sad.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't go up super, super high.
Well, they used to just think that was being depressed, but now they're seeing it as a bipolar illness. What about anxiety in children?
Anxiety is recognized by a lot of worry. A lot of kids will just worry excessively. And sometimes when I'm assessing kids, parents aren't even aware that the kids are worrying as much as they do. They tend to not talk about it a lot. So they worry about common themes like their parents dying or financial issues or school issues. Or all of the above. I mean, it can pile up and become just a whole bunch of worry.
How about obsessive worrying just can't stop?
Exactly. Anxiety is pretty amazing stuff clinically and pretty horrible if you're struggling with it. But it can come out in a variety of different ways. So anxiety can turn into panic attacks. And that's sometimes kids don't even know why they're scared. But they may hyperventilate and sweat and shake and even experience nausea and vomiting. So that can be a panic attack. Anxiety can also manifest itself in obsessive compulsive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So that's doing things over and over again and wishing they could stop, but they can't.
Like hand washing?
Hand washing 100 times a day, counting rituals, touching rituals. Those types of things, hanging up clothes all perfectly in a row, lining up toys perfectly in a row, and then becoming upset if they're moved. So that can be also a symptom of anxiety. Anxiety can also turn up as phobias. So fear of darkness, fear of spiders, fear of dogs. Sometimes when we have anxiety that we're not sure of what the origin is, we project that anxiety onto other things that we can control. Mm-hmm. So if we're afraid of, say, a parent dying, we have no control over that. So we can project our fears onto darkness. Mm-hmm. And if you're afraid of the dark, you can leave a light on. It's
right.
Something you can control. So phobias, I think, can develop that way.
Dana, going back to depression, and this is a hard topic to talk about. Suicide. Can we talk a little bit about the symptoms to watch out for?
I think that symptoms of suicide are basically reaching a point of hopelessness and without an ability to solve problems in life. And also there can be biological predisposition for depression. So it can be something that is an imbalance in neurotransmitters and then complicated by an inability to manage change or significant events that have happened in a child's life.
So you're saying that mental health issues such as depression and anxiety can be hereditary?
Yes, absolutely. If you're concerned about a child that may have some suicidal thoughts, we recommend that you ask. And a lot of parents are afraid to ask, but you can say.
Why is that?
I think that they're afraid of the answer. Or sometimes I think they're afraid that they'll plant the idea, maybe, in a child's head.
I think there's also that about talking about drugs and alcohol and difficult topics like that. You might not want to bring them up because, oh, I don't want my child to start thinking about these things. But
exactly.
If you have suspicions that something really serious is going on, to talk to your kid.
Absolutely. Ask. Or if you're concerned, have a counselor. Talk to them and ask. Because we'll ask, you know what, if they're having any thoughts of suicide, do they think about dying? Are they listening to music with death themes in it? Are they reading poetry and books with suicide themes? Those are some signs too. Have they talked to a friend about it? Ask, I think, is the best first step. And then if they are having thoughts, do they have a plan? And if they have a plan, do they have a timeline? So ask the hard questions, and they'll usually tell you. If they have a plan, do they have access to the method? If it's an overdose, do they have access to pills? If it's some other means, do they have access to complete that? The ideas are there, and they're hearing about this in the media. And they're hearing about it from friends, and it's out there.
You feel so protective of your child, and you want to protect them from all these things in the world, and you can't do it as much as you'd like.
I think that exposure to those ideas are going to happen, and that, you know, from early on, parents can help by being very clear about their values and communicating their values to their kids. Kids aren't always going to agree with grown-up values, but we can remind them from an early age what our values are and build healthy communication skills that you can use in emotional moments, and then good problem-solving skills. How do you solve a problem? Kids should know that, I think, from an early age.
That's a very important thing they're going to need later in life. And sometimes you think nothing's getting through, but you've got to try hard to be calm and continue to say the things that are necessary. It can be very difficult when a child is, let's say, being defiant. That's something, let's talk about briefly, there's something called ODD, Oppositional Defiant Disorder. What is it exactly, ODD?
It's a pattern of symptoms that really are symbolized by a child challenging everything an authority figure says. So if you say the sky is blue, you know the child is going to say, no, it's not. It's gray with some puffy white clouds in it. So they just disagree with everything. If you ask them to take out the garbage, they challenge you. Why? Why do I have to take out the garbage? Why don't you take out the garbage? Let somebody else take out the garbage. So it's just a pattern of challenging authority and disagreeing with grown-ups.
I can see that as something saying, well, that child is just being rude and selfish. Why don't you put them over your knee? Or that child needs more discipline. Is that going to take care of it?
You know, for some kids it might. For kids that maybe don't have too entrenched of a problem. But for other kids, they will step up to the challenge. And that's when things can get scary. So it can also be because of some other diagnosis that's going on. So if a child is struggling with ADHD, that can be a problem that you need to address first before you can resolve the oppositional defiant disorder.
ADHD is being diagnosed more than ever. That's my understanding. Is that?
I don't know if it's actually increasing or if just our ability to diagnose it is getting better. I know that historically there's examples of ADHD going back hundreds of years. So it's not anything that's particularly new, but I think that science is getting better and better at understanding it.
What is ADHD?
Well, it's people disagree, but from the reading that I've looked into, it's an imbalance in the electrical processing in the frontal lobes of the brain. Mm-hmm. It's not a choice that people make. It's not anybody's fault. It's actually not the food you eat, according to some sources. It's something that can be inherited. It's something that can be triggered by, for example, if the mom is using alcohol or drugs while she's pregnant with the child, that can be a contributing factor. Some people say that if a mom smokes while she's pregnant with a child, that can be a contributing factor. So I don't think that anybody can yet take a blood test and determine that it's ADHD. But there's some research that has looked at brain scans and measured electrical flow in between the frontal lobes, and that it definitely shows there's an imbalance. And actually, it's too low. And so the brain doesn't have the ability to screen out distractions that come in. And so it's, if people choose a medication as part of treatment, those medications speed up that electrical process. So kids have the ability, and grown-ups, because it doesn't go away particularly. And so that's what's happening. A really great book to read that helped me a lot is called Taking Charge of ADHD. And the author's last name is Barkley, I believe. And it really describes what ADHD is and what it isn't.
What are a few symptoms that parents are looking for with ADHD?
Kids who can't concentrate on tasks and complete them independently. Kids who lose track of conversations halfway through and drift off. Kids who are easily distracted by everything around them.
How do you tell that from normal behavior, especially with a younger child?
You know, the best I can say is an ADHD kid is pretty intense. And it's a struggle to manage that behavior constantly.
Does it come on at a certain particular age, generally?
Usually it's noticeable around the start of school, but I think that's because that's when we expect more of the kids.
Right.
And they have to sit still in class, and they have to complete chores and schoolwork, things like that. And that's when we tend to notice it. But I think that there's signs and symptoms early on. Of course, hyperactivity, the little kid who's constantly on the go, seems to challenge everything you ask. And again, that leads back into the whole oppositional defiant thing. Is it purely defiance, or is there something else underlying the defiance?
Some wiring.
Exactly.
We're talking about neurotransmitters and electrical connections in the brain. And
yes.
These are things that the child certainly can't help and the parent can't help, but there are things, is the drug called Ritalin? Is that the one?
That's one type of stimulant for ADHD.
I know that doesn't work for all kids, the
right.
stimulants, but I think that's the number one treatment for ADHD, is that
true? I think that's where people can start, but there's a lot of other drugs out there and there's a lot of behavioral modification programs that can help.
I think many parents are wary of starting medication. It's a huge decision to start your child in medication, and one big concern, of course, is there's not a tremendous amount of research on children in these drugs, as far as I know. Whereas an adult, things have been tested for years and years, antidepressants like Prozac.
I know how people feel about medication, and I can certainly understand that, because it's scary and you don't know what the side effects will be. And people put it off and put it off and put it off. And I know from experience that it can change people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
It can help stabilize kids so that they can pay attention and attend to task and feel better about themselves. I think it's at least worth a try. And you can always, if it doesn't work, you can stop it. There's other medications out there for ADHD that aren't stimulants, more and more.
You are looking at the balance of whether the child's able to function in school, at home,
and socially,
in the world, versus the medication. And you have to weigh, well, how is he or she doing? Are their problems reached a point where I really think it's time to try medication? To really look at that, and how is the child doing? It can be a very difficult decision for parents.
I agree, and it is a difficult decision. It's not a decision that can be made super easy. I think, though, medication is definitely worth a look for some people, maybe not for everybody, but I've seen it save kids' lives mm-hmm. over and over and over again.
What are some other therapy for kids?
There's lots of different kinds of therapy, and the main ones are, of course, cognitive-based therapies, and that's looking at how kids and grown-ups think and identifying whether there's a pattern of unhealthy thinking and how to help folks change that thinking into a more positive, proactive type of thinking, helping them restructure their thinking into a more effective, functional way. And that's one kind of therapy that you can start with. And we look at depression as a target for cognitive-based therapies. Mm-hmm. So helping people change those negative thinking patterns that tend to go with depression. Another type of therapy is behavioral, and that's finding ways to help folks change dysfunctional behavior to functional behavior through a process of reinforcement. And that's very effective for kids with ADHD. So a behavioral therapy in helping kids chart their successes and move towards a target goal is a nice therapy for a lot of kids, and a lot of kids with oppositional defiant disorder can benefit from behavioral interventions too.
There are many kinds of mental illness that we're talking about. You mentioned to me before we started something about psychosis. Could you explain what that is?
Psychosis is evidenced with symptoms like hallucinations, so hearing things or seeing things that other people don't. It can be also exhibited by classically a pattern of paranoia, so feeling like a person is being watched or followed. Classic ones like somebody thinks that the FBI is poisoning their food. That kind of is a classic symptom of paranoia. There's lots of other symptoms of paranoia too. Delusional thinking is another one where someone has an entrenched belief that is just bizarre, but can't be talked out of it or reasoned out of it.
And this is something that occurs in children?
Absolutely. It can. It's not super common, but it can.
This is a good time to mention Project Intercept. Can you tell us about that? It's a community health, mental health project for transitional youth.
It's a program that is being implemented statewide, and it's to address early intervention for youth that are experiencing psychosis. And it's a great program that works to keep them in their communities, working or going to school, and not being institutionalized, which traditionally has been the treatment of choice for people with psychosis. Although more and more we're getting away from that, and it's treating the person in their community using a broad base of providers, including psychiatrists and nurse practitioners and occupational therapists and counselors and vocational training. And it's just kind of a wraparound program to help those kids early on, starting at about 16, mm-hmm. although sometimes a little earlier, which is when we begin to see symptoms of psychosis.
And you're listening to Parenting 101 on Coast Community Radio. We'll continue our interview with Dana Crane from Clatsop Behavioral Healthcare in one moment. And we're back with Dana Crane from Clatsop Behavioral Healthcare, Child and Family Services. And Dana, we're touching on many different symptoms of mental health problems in kids. It can be overwhelming. Where does a parent start getting help?
If you suspect that your child is struggling with some mental health symptoms, you can talk with your community mental health provider. And here in our county, it's Clatsop Behavioral Healthcare. We can schedule your child to come in for an initial assessment, and we can sit down and do a full mental health assessment that covers all of the areas of a concern, including depression and anxiety, psychosis, ADHD, oppositional defiant disorder, conduct issues. We go over the whole history of the child from birth, prenatal history to present, and search for any traumatizing experiences or loss that the child may have experienced that might also be contributing, family history. And then from there, if we feel that further counseling is appropriate, we would sign you up with one of our mental health therapists in the children's team.
Mm-hmm.
From there, the counselor will work with the child. If symptoms continue to escalate, then they might be referred to the intensive treatment program, ICTS program, would provide a higher level of care. That's kind of where you would start.
Mm-hmm.
Clatsop Behavioral Healthcare predominantly serves clients who have Oregon Health Plan. And there's also a lot of private counselors and psychologists in the community. If you have your own private insurance or are paying out of pocket, that you can access also for assessments.
And sliding scale.
At Clatsop Behavioral Healthcare, we do have a sliding scale according to family income. So if you don't have insurance, we can also help with discounted fees.
Our insurance system is woefully inadequate as far as mental health coverage. I'm hoping that's going to change over time.
Mental health parity in counseling is something that mental health folks have been advocating for few years now, and it's been a long struggle, and mental health symptoms aren't seen on the same level as physical health symptoms, even though they can cause as much disruption or more in a
Certainly.
Family. That's beginning to change, but it's still way, way behind because of the stigma that's attached to mental health disorders. And it's almost a blame the victim kind of process in our society. I think it's basically due to a lack of understanding about mental health. Science hasn't quite caught up yet with really what causes it, and so it's blamed on the person struggling with it, the symptoms themselves, rather than a possible biological process we don't understand yet.
Well, that's what behavioral health care is looking into, a children's day treatment. Can you tell us something about that?
Day treatment programs are programs that actually, instead of like if the child is too disruptive for the classroom or the school setting, that day treatment programs are available throughout the state where there's mental health therapists and behavioral specialists and licensed medical professionals on site who maybe do prescribing of medication. So it's a real intensive program that kids can participate in throughout the week. And instead of having to go into inpatient settings, they can go to day treatment and get intensive case management and therapy and psychiatric services all kind of in one place.
Is this something that's already in place, or is
we do not have a day treatment program in this county, and it would really be awesome to have one. And so I think that we're looking for ways to try and develop a day treatment program. I don't know that it's imminent, but it's always something that we have on our wish list.
NAMI, the National Association for Mental Illness, does that offer services for children?
I believe it does offer some services for children. It's a great family support agency, and it offers some classes that folks can take. I think it's about a 12-week course, and it can help families struggling who have children with mental illness. It's a fabulous organization, and I highly recommend it for anybody who might have a child with psychosis or bipolar disorder, a major mental illnesses, and anxiety. They've just done an amazing job of advocating for mental health services. and I've been involved with NAMI for, I would say, 20 years now. And they're an amazing organization.
In June of last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics called for all pediatricians to screen children and adolescents for mental illness and substance use.
I think that's awesome. I think that mental health screening should be a part of physical exams from the birth of the child on. I think it should be part of an annual physical. It should just be part of the routine so that we can identify them early on and then get treatment started quickly. I think also what's really important is to work with your regular doctor, because sometimes mental health symptoms are triggered by physical problems like thyroid disorder or diabetes. Thyroid disorder can trigger a whole bunch of mood problems and anxiety. And so if your child is experiencing symptoms of depression and anxiety, go to your doctor and talk to them about it and get a full blood screening, blood panel for all of those things, because all the counseling in the world, it can't change.
If you have a thyroid that's
exactly
a problem. And as they're saying here, the American Academy of Pediatrics, perhaps this is something that's going to happen, that mental health screenings be part of a regular checkup for kids. That's a great idea, and I think that'll help to contribute to maybe the stigma going away, where this is all a whole health thing, mental health, physical health.
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
If I ran the circus, you know, what would I do? And I think that, again, mental health screenings would be a part of medical screenings from the start, and that families would really be on top of creating a great, healthy environment for their kids through values clarification. We talked about that earlier, through learning healthy communication skills and problem-solving skills. I think that if families had those skills on board from the beginning, that would help, especially if there is a biological predisposition for mental health.
How do the parents get educated to be able to do these things?
I think they almost have to self-educate in this day and age. And there's parenting classes all throughout the community, and those are advertised often in the paper and through a variety of agencies. A lot of resources online about childhood development. You know, be prepared for the transitions that kids make from an early age. If parents are ready for that and have a plan in place, it's a lot easier.
Well, healthy communication.
Good listening skills. Good ability to express yourself in emotional situations. Ability to teach your kids how to solve problems. And there's lots of great stuff on the internet, too, on how to be a good critical thinker and how to problem solve. And how to teach your kids those skills from an early age. How to set boundaries with folks who might take advantage of us, both in a school setting and in the community, could help our kids stand up to bullies. So I think that's another early skill to teach kids, is how to be assertive and how to set boundaries.
We've been talking to Dana Crane from Clatsop Behavioral Health Care's Child and Family Services team. Don't forget that the first week of May, Children's Mental Health Awareness Week. Let's make children's mental health care more easily accessible for everyone. Thank you, Dana.
Thanks for having me.
This is Parenting 101. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, offers services in Clatsop, Tillamook, and Pacific counties. For more information, contact NAMI, NAMI.org, or call the NAMI Information Helpline at 1-800-950-NAMI.